This is Two Dope Boys and a Podcast. I'm Michael Brooks.
I'm Phil McKenzie.
And this is On Point. This is our weekly segment where we turn a little bit away from the sarcasm. We're never fully away from the sarcasm because this is the Dope Boys. But we focus on somebody, something, a movement, a brand, a work of art. Somebody that's getting it right. Somebody that's on point.
I'm very excited for this edition of On Point because we have one of my Caribbean brethren, sisterin, on the phone with us, and I couldn't be more pleased to talk with Ms. Marjoan Kennedy, the author of an amazing book called Callaloo. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Let's jump right into it and give us a little bit of a background and a little bit of the thought behind creating Callaloo. Like, let our listeners know what it's all about.
Sure. Well, one, I mean, I think all of your Caribbean listeners, I'm sure everyone has heard of Callaloo if you are from the Caribbean or live in Caribbean populated communities. But it is a food that's eaten all throughout the Caribbean, and it's a spinach-like stew that, is popular in Trinidad, Jamaica, Bahamas even, and everyone makes it a little differently, and it's the dasheen is the root vegetable, but similar to spinach or collard greens that Americans may know. But my idea of creating Callaloo, the book and the animation and the live performances, the company of what we are, really came from my interest in exploring how culture, specifically Caribbean African diaspora culture, is mixed up, and how our identities are all intertwined together. And I chose to call Callaloo Callaloo because that's what this series is all about. It follows a group of kids, our main character, Winston, who travels throughout the Caribbean. Our first book, Winston Traveled to Trinidad, and our second book, Winston and his friend Marisol, they travel to Puerto Rico, and they learn about the folklore, the history, culture, the food traditions of each place they visit. So Puerto Rico and Trinidad are just the first two islands our characters visit, but our entire company is based on getting kids to understand, celebrate, and learn about cultures all over the world, to expand their cultural literacy, social awareness, and social education.
Michael here. I also just want to co-sign as the one non-Caribbean member of this conversation. Callaloo is really good. It's true. That isn't that isn't just sort of like
it is delicious.
West Indian bias. There's also it's just good food, period. What I'm curious about is going into this space. I mean, this is like a very interesting time right now because so many conversations are being disrupted and sort of re-examined with this kind of like basic premise of, I guess, representation, if we want to use that terminology, but just like the basic notion of it's crazy that all of these different forms in which we produce culture does not reflect the full range of human experience, essentially, and very particularly in America, you know, the full range of excluded and sort of marginalized voices in America. Is there something specifically interesting to you? I guess one track would be just artistic, that this is a place that you want to engage in because that's, you know, where you're at and that's what interests you. But also, is there a social thought process behind bringing these stories, bringing this food, bringing this perspective to a broader and younger audience?
Definitely. I think I occupy a lot of different spaces, and I think my intention in the beginning was to actually tackle all those things you mentioned. Just I can first start just creatively. I've been working in theater and film and media for over 12 years now in a lot of different capacities, and that is absolutely true that we don't see accurate reflections of people of color in the media, whether it's film, television, print, magazine, children's media, just across the board. We don't see it. And there's a lot of talk on, you know, how do we include diverse voices, and this word diversity, which I'm not a huge fan of.
Explain why you don't like that word. That's fascinating. I don't like that word either for some reason, but I don't have a reason behind it.
Yeah, we use the language we're stuck with, but if you have like some key reasons that diversity as a term doesn't resonate with you, like, we'd love to hear that.
Yeah.
Well, for me, I think it's just a buzzword. It's a word that, you know, gets people, just brings people to the table, which I think is important. We do need to talk about it, but I'm very interested in the action. I think that true diversity comes when we see all different faces at the table. We occupy the space, we're telling the stories, we have power. And I think a lot of times with diversity, we're just being invited to the table. What we're doing with Kalalu, from my perspective, is that we are a team of color, that in terms of creatively, we are the animators, writers, directors, producers, designers, and you can see the real diversity in our work. Everything from the creative design, how the characters are created based on their skin color, their eye, how their eyes are formed, how we perform, how we use language, and that's because we have those lived experiences. The people that are creating them have those lived experiences. So for me, these stories are normal. This is normal for me. I was, I'm from the States. I was born in D.C. My mom is from Trinidad and my dad is African American. And I grew up in a very blended community where I saw all different types of people, spoke different languages. And my eyes were open to that. I think a lot of kids that live in urban metropolitan cities, those are their experiences. That's not reflected, especially for young children, what they actually see. So to me, I think it's very funny, when we Kalalu gets placed as like a multicultural brand, or we're promoted at bookstores for Black History Month. But these are real experiences that kids see every single day. And it's a constant challenge to continuously talk about this in a way that there's a reason why, we don't see so many authors of color or books for children of color. And it's because it's not that there aren't authors out there, authors of color writing them. It's just that we may not have access. We may not have the resources. And I think that's what true diversity is. It's when it's coupled with, okay, we're at the table, you can hear our voice, but we also have access to resources. We have access to marketing, to power, to, those publishers. Everything that we do with Kalalu is independent. We self-publish, we self-produce, and we're very proud of that because we get to control the image. And I think that's something that especially artists need to be much more in tune with, that the power that we have is in controlling our images and telling our stories.
You said a lot of like really amazing things. And so as you were going on, I'm trying to think of there are different directions I wanted to go. I'll start with the first one of your last points first, which is this idea of controlling your images, controlling your story, and being independent. Do you think when you started this journey, did you start it off with the intention of being an independent media company, or did it end up that way due to not having access to some of those traditional publishers? or partners or and what have you?
Yeah, I mean, I think just as a creative artist, I've always taken it upon myself to write my own stories. I started off just as a performer on stage and moved more towards film, and but on the side I kept writing and I was working on plays. So I was always kind of doing it myself. I never really waited for, you know, a big company or agent or whatnot to back me. But actually, the more that I started developing Callaloo as a play, the root of this actually came from a play that I wrote in 2012, and people just really resonated to it. We got workshopped at Lincoln Center. We did it in New York and D.C., and it was sold-out shows. And the more I kept producing it independently, I knew that there was an audience for it, and I slowly was able to assemble a team of creative professionals that I've worked with through actually high school, filmmakers, animators, designers, and we've just maintained a very good relationship. And we really just organically did it ourselves. In the beginning, I actually did reach out to publishers and, you know, just, you know, to pitch to them, you know, I have this great idea. There's nothing on the market out there. We really had no competition. And I was rejected from, you know, every publisher. I'd say I contacted about 25 publishers. You know, either they just didn't respond or they said, you know, I'm not a well-known writer. I have no representation. I just, you know, in their eyes, this wouldn't sell. So I am a very determined person. When I get rejected, I spent a long time as an actor, so rejection doesn't bother me that much.
built some real immunity for rejection there, for sure.
It really lit a fire under me. So once I was rejected, I became even more adamant about producing it myself. And I was able to assemble a very strong team who all equally, you know, were doing incredible work in their own specific areas and really saw that there was a need for this. There was a need, especially, you know, getting to see children light up, not only to see stories and characters they could relate to, but seeing professionals of color doing it. So many kids, you know, run up to us and are just, they've never seen a female, you know, Caribbean author or black female author or black animators. They've never seen it. So they're excited about, you know, maybe they can do that one day, that their stories, their experiences are valid. And I think that is the power in the artist being able to control what we want to say, what we want to do, who we want to market to. So I think organically, you know, we always wanted to be independent, and now we're kind of at a place where some of those big media companies and publishers, they're seeing the movement that we've created, and we're getting some interest now, and it's even better because now we can say this is what we want. This is our product. This is our brand. And how do you want to work with that?
You're coming from a position of strength. I mean, the other thing that's interesting to me is, you know, and I'll just sort of connect this with a random example. Well, maybe not so random for purposes of this conversation, but example from my own life. When I was a kid, I was like a Robin Hood and King Arthur junkie, and particularly Robin Hood, which I guess probably explains my appreciation of like Che and Castro, I guess. It started when I was a kid. But I remember my mother, and I don't remember where she got this book or what the story was, but there was this book that I got along a kind of similar vein called Sunnyata, The Lion King. And it was a sort of similar story, like in that vein, except it was set in somewhere, I believe, in West Africa. And it was like, you know, basically a kid who was the rightful heir to the throne. He had a father-in-law who was an asshole. He couldn't, he was he had a problem with his ability to walk, and it's, you know, just sort of like a typical hero's journey. Get your place in the world that, you know, if you were a boy like me who was out, you know, wanting to read Robin Hood and, you know, go and throw rocks and cause trouble, you would really, really resonate with. And I think what's so interesting about the kind of idea of speaking to kids in some respects, particularly when they're very young, is that, you know, some cliches that do not work in the adult world, like, you know, we're all people and we all just need to hear each other's stories. You know, things that are a lot more complicated. In some ways, they're still more complicated, but maybe they're slightly more true when kids are reading them in a certain sense. You know, if you get 5, 6, 7, 8-year-old, 9-year-old kids just getting exposed to different stories and narratives, I think that that does have some type of innate mechanisms for building a greater sophistication about the world and people in it, no matter where you're starting from.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree that the folklore, like what you said about Robin Hood, you know, folklore is, every culture has a folklore. Every culture has an oral storytelling tradition. And as a writer and, I mean, I've always looked up to, you know, people like Zora Neale Hurston that just captured the culture and the folk history of, you know, African-American people. But people like that is who what has attracted me and inspired me as a writer. But, I mean, the folklore is the thing that really grounds our work with Kalalu, that, you know, folklore, it teaches values. It teaches people's beliefs. And I think that is something that all people, and especially children, that is the thing, and especially the food history, that's the thing that brings us to the table, that kids just innately want to learn and hear about those stories. And I'm, you know, before I started working on Kalalu, I didn't really do much in children's theater and media and storytelling, so all of this was really new to me. I always considered myself a storyteller, but not particularly for children. And for me, they are the best audience. They come to the table so excited, so ready to embrace everything we have to teach them. And it is frightening to me that, you know, all children, a lot of children only see very specific types of stories or see specific types of characters and peoples and customs that are valued, when the world is just made up of so many unique places and experiences and languages. And I think that if kids are exposed to these things from a very early age, they will start to develop a cultural sensitivity towards people in their community. They will just get an interest in traveling and wanting to know more about the world. And a lot of the, you know, the spaces that we are in now, you know, as adults and kind of, you know, politically where we're at, it really shows you just how, you know, desensitized we are to other people's customs and racism and sexism. And I could only imagine, you know, a generation of children who grow up valuing other people and listening and not allowing for Eurocentric customs and traditions to kind of be at the core of everything. So we're trying to do that with Kalalu. We're trying to expose kids to all different types of stories, all different types of characters, and I really do see us making a tremendous dent in the children's media world, and we've only been doing it for about 3 years now. So I definitely do think that, you know, the folklore and the storytelling is a huge, huge aspect of getting kids excited to learn, to read, and wanting to know more to expand their curiosity.
I mean, I think you made a lot of really interesting points, and you know, I barely remember a lot of the things I read as a young kid, you know, I kind of remember like Where the Wild Things Are and the, you know, all the Dr. Yes, Seuss.
Yeah,
that
man.
Was one of my favorite. Yeah, one of my favorites.
These are classics. You know, Where the Wild Things
good
Are.
Stories and, are good stories.
You know, period, yeah. A Snowy Day.
Yeah.
You know, with the kid with the red. Yeah. I just remember like the red coat he had as he made the footsteps and all that kind of stuff. And you know, to kind of fast forward to the work you've done with Kalalu, you know, one of the things that really struck me as I've, you know, kind of studied civil rights movement and things like that, and this is kind of a serious note, but, you know, one of the things that was used in, I believe, like the famous Brown versus Board of Education, like desegregation cases, was like a doll study, you know, where they gave, you know, black kids a doll or asked them which doll they wanted, whether it was a white doll or a black doll. And then they assigned like a certain sort of like values to them, like, why do you want this doll versus another? And it's, you know, there was a recent documentary on PBS where they sort of reenacted that. And unfortunately, not much has changed, surprisingly enough. And it's, you know, it's heartbreaking to see these kids kind of reject an image of themselves. And so I'm kind of curious about, was that part of the intention with kind of creating these sort of folklore and cultural stories as you guys as a team produced all the work that is around Kalalu? And you mentioned that it's not only a book, it's a series where these characters will be visiting many islands, our countries in the Caribbean. So I'm curious as to, you know, how you see yourself fleshing out that universe. And also, do you see it as being a part of your work to address some of these psychological issues that we're still confronting around image that young kids might be seeing and the world that they're in?
Yeah, definitely. I've always considered myself a, if you would say, a media activist or artist activist. And it's just, I know it's cool to be an activist when, especially on Twitter or when it's
maybe not so much actually. Sometimes.
right. Sometimes. Yeah. But I mean, I grew up in, you know, I grew up in DC. It's known as Chocolate City, not so much anymore, but I've always had that lens where I've seen race, I see gender, I see class, I see all those things in my work, and it's just not something I can get away from. And I won't say every artist should have that lens, but I think as artists we have a duty to reflect the world that we live in, and to speak to it and speak some truth, and hopefully, you know, leave the world a better place, and whatever that means to every artist. But I think with Kalalu, I actually have had instances, you know, where especially, you know, Caucasian children, they have some very nasty things to say. And, you know, they're kids, 5, 6, 7 years old. But you can see how it permeates the racism and how kids just identify. They identify with color. They may not know the terminology, but even, you know, kids of color, Latino or, you know, African-American, Caribbean, they may identify, they enjoy seeing the characters, but there's been instances where kids will, you know, make fun of, you know, the texture of a character's hair or, you know, and, you know, we have puppets. In our live performances, we have larger life-size puppets similar to the Muppets, like Kermit the Frog, Miss Piggy. And that way kids can really engage with us. And, you know, there have been instances where kids will say some pretty nasty things and, you know, we don't really say anything back. But it's always alarming to see that because it just shows you, you know, children have been on this planet for 6, 7 years, and they've already seeing, you know, what is valuable, what is pretty, what is ugly, what is good, what is bad. And I think one way we can combat it is to continue to make work that shows, that has kids of color at the focus of the narrative. For example, our second book that we recently released, our main character Marisol, you know, is Puerto Rican descent from New York City, from the Bronx, and she is the lead character. It's her story. It's her family story. She's the hero. She saves the day. And I think from that perspective, I was writing it for girls, you know, to see themselves as the hero. The narrative is around them. It's not about being a princess. It's not about having a boy come in and save you, but you are the center of your narrative, and especially, you know, the Latina girl, for her to experience that and that connection to the culture in New York City. So for me, as we continue to grow Callaloo, we're planning on releasing actually all five of our characters that will make up the Callaloo kids by the beginning of 2017. That will, for us, will reflect, in my mind, the real diversity of what America is. And hopefully, you know, kids will be able to identify something in each character. We're also going to be introducing some social topics that each character will kind of embody, things like autism, you know, disabilities, you know, health and nutrition, and, you know, things for kids to, you know, I've actually never seen a lot of children's characters address these topics where, you know, there are a lot of kids that deal with, like, dyslexia or some type of physical ailment, and they're not being reflected in books and in cartoons either. So that's another avenue we are going to go down. And we've got a lot of parents excited about that, because they want their kids to be able to feel like they have a place. And if kids grow up and they don't feel like they're valued or their voice isn't important, you know, they're not important in their society, they'll continue to grow up and, you know, have this have low self-esteem, and it'll carry on through high school, through college, and, you know, there's so many conversations on how we can get our black and brown children, you know, performing at higher levels. I think we have to start, you know, when they're babies. We have to give them positive images of themselves.
I mean, I think that's I always ask toward the end, like, what are the things that we should be looking out for and should be on the horizon? But, you know, you've kind of actually given us that just in answering that question. And I think it's a credit to kind of full circle to where we started having some thoughts around diversity. And, you know, as you started outlining some of the future plans for expansion with these characters and them dealing with different issues and going through different life cycles, all of those things are part of the quote unquote diversity question. Even though oftentimes at a base level, that question is framed in white and black, no pun intended. So I think it's great to hear all the things you're working on. It's awesome. You know, we want to take this journey with yourself and the Callaloo kids as they go through all of this.
Yes,
I guess if there's like maybe one or two things in the near term we should be on the lookout for, give us that just so we're aware. I know you have a pretty good editorial calendar. So we want to give you an opportunity to do that. But, you know, before we kind of wrap, I want to say this has been really great and it's awesome. As someone from the West Indies, it's amazing to hear these stories being represented to our own audiences as well as broader audiences. And it'll be even more special to be home next week as a result of this.
I obviously can't match that, but as someone who really likes Callaloo, I would like to co-sign to the extent that I can.
Well, thank you. This has been great to just have this conversation with you guys. So It's always nice to, you know, reflect on kind of the work that we're doing and on a deeper level. I mean, the kids are so cute, our Callaloo kids, and the visuals, the animation, the storytelling is so much fun. And, you know, for me, to the writing process and the research process, there's so many layers and levels to it. So I appreciate having the space to talk about it on a deeper level. But I guess some of the things we're working on in the upcoming months, we're really going to be focusing in on building the universe of the Callaloo Kids. We're going to be releasing our third book is going to come out in 2017. We'll be releasing the culture that we're going to be exploring probably by the end of the summer. We have some new products that are going to be coming out, some coloring books and some different, Callaloo clothing line. So we'll have some fun stuff.
Phil, you're going to start rocking the Callaloo clothing line here? Can we get some onesies? Yeah, can we get like a Dope Boys Callaloo hybrid onesies that we could roll around in?
That would be awesome.
Look, I'm just trying to create synergies here.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, it's not confirmed yet, but a lot of kids love the Callaloo Converses that our puppets rock. Some of the kids have, we'll be working with some kid designers and visual artists who are going to be helping us on a few different projects. So we have some good things coming up. Everything is on our website, callalooThebook.com. You can order our books there. We have a lot of fun activity sheets, and we have our web series as well, How To with Callaloo. We're going to be working on our second season. We're going to be shooting that by the end of the year. So we have a lot of different things going on, as well as all of our live performances, and we work in the schools as well. So if people are interested in our arts education work, you can find out more about that on our website as well.
Perfect.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. And now I'm hungry.
Yeah.
But
same.